It's time for Toronto's Top Line.
I McMuffin that bad boy within half an hour of getting in my car on the way home.
Okay.
So I hit McDonald's in the morning, Swiss Chalet at night.
Yeah.
And wrapped it up with a Dairy Queen order. I think I put on weight. I ran a 10K, and I'm pretty sure I put on weight.
This is Overdrive with Hayes, Noodles, and the O-Dog on TSN 1050.
Hour 2 Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN Go app. Chris Pronger is going to join us here in a moment. Get his take on the NHL playoffs so far, what we can expect out of Game 6 tonight between Ottawa and the Rangers. The only game going tonight, and I'll say this about that series, they could use the profile. They could use the stage all to themselves because the games have been very entertaining, yet
they have.
All of the focus has been on Penguins, Capitals, and I think Oilers, Ducks. I mean, those two series have just been on a different level in terms of the right. dramatics and the different storylines, right?
You're 100%. It almost feels like that series has just kind of been over, and I don't know, respect is the wrong word. You haven't given it enough respect because the games have been wild, and there has been a lot of different storylines, too. I know Chris Neal getting injected, there's a big argument of the fighting against the non-fighting crowd and what Neal brings to the table playing 2 minutes and all of that. And
do you not feel part of the lack of excitement that there's the notion that whoever wins the series is going to get pumped the next series by either Washington or Pitt?
There's an NBA feel to it.
Yeah.
Like, go ahead, fill your boots, have fun this round, and guess what's going to happen in a week?
Yeah.
It does kind of have that feel to it. Now, anything can happen. I think you got to give credit to both teams. They're built similarly. They're resilient. Their goalies haven't played that well, but they have the capability of playing really well.
Right.
And the way Carlson's playing right now, he can carry a team like he has, I believe, through two rounds. But I'm with you. Like,
Ottawa's going to win tonight. They have to win tonight, I think.
I don't think they're going to win tonight.
You don't think so?
No, I think New York wins tonight. Look at the last two games at the Garden. They weren't even close.
Right. But Craig Anderson, if you actually look at outside of those two games, I believe he's 7-1 at the Garden in his career and been pretty good. I'm looking at Craig Anderson. I'm circling his name. He has to be the difference because he hasn't been very good. Neither Lundqvist was terrible last game. That game-winning goal.
Brutal.
Like, if that was Frederik Andersen in the playoffs here, like, people would be pissed off.
Mm-hmm.
I think both goaltenders have been kind of similar where they're making the miraculous save and then weird ones are getting in.
Some cheapies here and there, yeah. I agree.
So it's like the whole body of work is just kind of weird.
I feel like if the Caps end up winning Game 7, they may not lose another game. Doesn't it kind of feel like that? Like, remember the Sox in 04 when they were down 3-0 against the Yankees?
Yeah.
And then they just kept pushing back, and they finally slayed that dragon. They finally beat New York. And I believe they played the Cardinals in the World Series. I'm pretty sure it was a four-game sweep. I have to go back and look at it. But I kind of feel like if Washington, down 3-1, finds a way to come back to beat Pittsburgh,
They're unstoppable.
How do you stop them at that point?
They
Who
were good last
is
night.
Is going to stop them at this point?
They were good last night.
Very good. Like, that was the team that won the President's Trophy. That was the team that everyone was saying, it's their year, this is why they're finally going to do it.
Yeah.
Yet, if they lose tomorrow night in Game 7...
Ah, you're chokers.
They're still chokers.
Right.
Right? And I do wonder about the mentality of it all. Like, when they're down 3-1, they've got nothing to lose. They're battling uphill. That's when they play their best hockey. Now they're favored again. They're on home ice. Does that affect their psyche that the choke label is going to be right there again? I mean, right? You got to win that game. You battle back. It's Game 7 at home. The old, if I had a told the in September routine, I don't know if they're going to be able to play to the same level knowing that they're back in the driver's seat.
But they are a group that seems to be, like you say, they're resilient. And I don't know if it's guys like Justin Williams who just help that dressing room settle down, and he seems to raise his level there. He'll have a platform, Mr. Game 7. See how he unfolds. It's special players need to elevate at special times. No better time than a Game 7.
Game 7, I really do think it separates the men from the boys. And it's easy for non-athletes to try to reason with how they would play in that situation. Ultimately, it's hypothetical. They're never in that position.
Right.
But I do think the majority of non-athletes, like super focused, super talented, super driven, would just buckle in a moment like that. Right? Like, you put me in a game seven, and I think I'd bail quickly, man.
Wow.
I'd bail quickly. But you put the best of the best, you put the guys that can really get it done in that situation, they thrive.
Yeah.
I know a guy who I'd like in a game seven.
Yeah,
we're about to bring him on here.
This gentleman could step up in a game seven.
What he can do in a game seven is rip a one-timer from the point, spring a guy in a breakaway,
and break
also break someone's arm
and if
ankle,
he needed it.
And arm and leg.
All right, you want to bring him in?
No, go ahead.
All right, here's friend of the show, one of our favorites. We haven't caught up with him in a while. Here's Chris Pronger. What's happening, Chris?
What's up, boys? Not since a birthday, and there's no birthdays today, but we're close.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, we always love having you on, and we're just talking about the mentality going into a game seven. And would you treat it differently? I mean, it has to feel a little bit different, right? Game seven compared to games one through six.
Yeah, I think you try not to, because you certainly don't want to stress yourself out. Or I think everybody's thoroughly aware of what's at stake and what it means. It's the ultimate do or die game. Somebody's going home, but I think there's that added, much like for the teams that are down, whether it be 3-1, 3-2, or now the series is tied at 3-3, they've been playing that way and sometimes have a little bit of an edge because they've had their backs to the wall for one, two, or three games.
Prongs, people talk about you a lot, about the teammate they want going into a game seven. Who are some of the guys that you played with, whether it be some of the Olympics or different competitions or just regular, club team playoff games that you really knew you didn't have to worry about them going into a big game, other than Noodles?
Other than Noodles opening the door for me?
Yes.
One guy would be Scott Niedermayer, just from playing with him a number of times on Olympic teams in big games. Obviously, the stage is a little bit different there. You only got one game to achieve your goal. But the way he goes about his business, calm, cool, and collected, and anybody that can skate that way and see the ice the way he can was always a joy to play with. A couple of guys that come to mind from Olympics, Joe Sakic, Steve Yzerman, Mario. Some of these guys that, Sid in Vancouver came up with a big goal. So I think as you go through these different experiences, and I think a lot of these teams will rely on past experiences and whether they're favorable or unfavorable for them, they're able to look at it a little bit differently, but can use some of that to their advantage, or can use some of that to push them hopefully to that next level.
We know the recent history of the Ducks in Game 7s, specifically at home. I mean, ever since you and Niedermayer left the team, they've had some real issue closing the doors on Game 7, and Boudreau was there for a lot of it. And I found it interesting that Randy Carlyle, right after Game 6, came out and said, hey, don't look at me. I wasn't here for any of this. If you're in the room and you hear your coach distance himself from the previous history of the team, specifically in situations like the one you're about to face, how would you feel about that?
Yeah, you know what? I don't take it that way. I think you have to know Randy. I think you have to know, and you have to be around the team on a day-to-day basis to know that he's trying to put that in their heads that, hey, this is a different situation. This is not us then. This is us now. We're a different team. We're a different group. And I think that's mentality he's taking when he says that. I don't think it has any. He could care less. If the media wants to brandish him with the same brush that Bruce Boudreau has or whatever everybody's trying to do, he's trying to get it in their heads that, hey, this is a different mentality. This is a different group. Let's turn the page. Just like Edmonton turned the page for the previous game, we need to do the same thing and come out with our best effort in Game 7.
Chris, does anything need to be said? You just talked about some of the big platforms you've been on, whether it was in the Olympics or a Game 7 in finals or in the playoffs. I know preparing for it and looking around the room, you see different personalities. Does somebody need to say something in the room, or is it just kind of business as usual and you kind of treat it like that?
I think it's business as usual. You certainly know the magnitude of what's at stake. In this case, it's advancing to the conference finals if you're in a game seven. And you need to, as I said earlier, I don't think you want to stress out over it, but I think that moment of, laying it all out on the line, whether you got to throw your face in front of a shot to block it, whether you got to, play with a broken foot, as you saw Alex Steen do here in St. Louis. Guys are willing to do a lot of things to win hockey games and be a part of a winner. And, I think the teams that are coming up on these Game 7 are no different. In the case of Pittsburgh, they've, defending Stanley Cup champion and a certain pedigree, but how healthy are they and how confident are the Washington Capitals now after the last couple games?
With Hall of Famer Chris Pronger, big story last night outside of the outcome was what happened with Crosby, and we know his history with concussions, and obviously you're a prominent athlete that had a concussion issue yourself, and at this point, everyone on the outside is trying to figure out what the protocol is, how all this kind of stuff is handled. Take us back to your experience. How much control did you feel you had over how you were feeling and when you were going to get back into the game? How much was on you? How much was the medical staff, the team, the league, et cetera?
Yeah, I think early on, a lot of it was me, just from the standpoint of, okay, I needed to... Mine was a little bit different than a lot of the concussion cases, just from the standpoint of a lot of it was my eye. So I needed to lay in bed and not move for 6 days to just let the swelling come down and flush the blood out of my eye and keep putting these drops in to keep my pupil dilated and a lot of different things just for my eye, not necessarily for my head. My head was actually the secondary issue at that time. And then as I got to move around a little bit, then you're kind of getting a light exercise, then you're going out for practice, and then I started playing, and because you're so sedentary for such a long period of time, you're thinking, well, I don't feel good because I didn't do anything for 10 days. I don't feel good because, I'm out of shape, and you start coming up with different reasons why you might not feel good, and then ultimately you go into an environment. My last game was in Winnipeg, and it was really loud, and there was a number of situations where I did some things that I've never done, where you're kind of setting yourself up to get killed, and luckily I didn't, but there were, I fell down taking a one-timer. I did a bunch of things that I've never done before, and after that game, I just kind of sat back, and I'm like, said to the trainer, we got to get checked out here. Something's not right. You go in, you get checked, and after that point, once I got checked, and I get diagnosed, and I start kind of going through the process, everything was still in my hands. Mr. Snyder and Homer and the Flyers staff were great. They understood kind of what was at stake and where I was in this process. And from my head to my eye, it was kind of a combination of the two. And, really it was just trying to figure out what was in my best interest and was I going to be able to play again? And if once it was kind of deemed and established that I wasn't, how can we get you to the best people we can and get you as healthy as we can for life after hockey?
We were talking about this, I think, late last week. What would other athletes say to Crosby if he reached out to them about their own situation? And I don't know if you and Sid have ever talked about it before, but how comfortable would you be, giving him advice about his own situation?
I actually did talk to him after I got hurt, and we were kind of going through, we were seeing some of the same doctors, and we talked a little bit right before he was coming back, and I just told him, like, dude, you're a finesse player. You don't have to be a power forward. You don't have to hit people. Like, your job is to play with the puck. You don't have to initiate contact. It's gonna come to you. Trust me. You don't have to play like Peter Forsberg. Like, early in his career, he was trying to play like Peter Forsberg and reverse hit guys and do all these things. And I'm like, dude, you are not big enough. You're just not. You might have big legs and you might think you're strong, but you're not strong enough. You're going to take a beating for no reason. Just be the player you are. You don't have to be anybody that you're not. You don't have to fight people. You don't have to reverse hit people. You don't have to engage physically for no reason. I mean, yes, you play a power game from the standpoint of working the boards and keeping the puck in your feet and cycling in the corners and eluding and evading players and then getting the puck to the net or making plays. That's your game. Do it. Play your game. Don't try to make people proud or want to get different people on your side because you're playing a more physical game and you're kind of challenging yourself. I mean, now's not the time to challenge yourself. You need to take care of yourself and make sure you're prepared. And once you're prepared, play your own style.
With Hall of Famer Chris Pronger here on Overdrive, these playoffs, man, through two rounds, we're not even through. Two rounds have been thoroughly entertaining. Has anything stood out to you that has seemed to make this year that much better than previous years?
Can a team win at home?
No kidding.
Not very many teams winning at home. I can tell you that. The friendly confines of whatever game whatever rank the game is in is not so friendly. Teams have been road warriors this year. It's been interesting to kind of see how that has played out.
Do you think it's from distractions? I mean, think about when you went through the process.
I personally think when you're on the road, you're not so worried about matchups. You're just playing the game. And, yeah, you want to get certain players out against certain people, and you slowly try to work that in. But at the end of the day, if you're a flow team, you want to just kind of roll. And some teams get so into their matchups, and it just throws the bench off. It throws players out of their flow of how they like to play. And, you know, certain players play 25 minutes, and if you're trying to match all the time and they're playing 18 minutes, 20 minutes, I mean, they're sitting there longer than they're used to, and they're constantly looking, okay, well, there's my matchup. I got to go. And the guy but plays in their end. So now they got to sit there, and they miss their matchup, so now they don't play. So I just think sometimes on the road, and you're playing a boring game. You know, the home team is trying to put on a show. The home team is trying to pass the puck into the net, whereas you got the road team just taking a point shot with traffic, and everybody's crashing the net for rebounds, and they're banging on home.
Well, that's certainly been the case almost across the board, except for this round with Ottawa in New York. They had troubles in the Garden, yet tonight they're hoping to close this series out, and there's been so much focus on Carlson. There's no one better to ask than you. I mean, you played the position, Norris winner, Hart winner, Hall of Famer. This guy is playing at a level that we haven't seen in a while. What do you make of his style, his growth, and just how valuable Carlson has been to the Ottawa Senators?
All on a broken foot, too, which is equally impressive. Yeah. I've done that, and it doesn't feel very good. And it hasn't seemed to limit, you know, yeah, he seems like he's in discomfort sometimes on the bench, but it doesn't seem to affect his mobility on the ice, which is impressive. And, you know, I think with this coaching staff coming in, he's bought into playing more defense and playing the position more methodically and not. He still leads the rush on offense, and he still leads the forecheck sometimes. He still does some of this stuff. But, you know, I think his growth as a player has really taken it to that next level in how he plays defense. You know, I think, like anything else, experience and being a part of the Stanley Cup playoffs and being a part of Olympics and being a part of the World Cup and being a part of all these things and being around veteran players like Zetterberg and some of these guys, I think he's kind of taken some of that and added it to his game and to his leadership abilities and all the rest of that. And you can certainly see he's made a big improvement in how he plays defense, but I think how he plays the game and how he sees the game from a hockey sense perspective.
It's going to be a blast the next couple of nights, to say nothing, in the following two rounds. Always appreciate the insight, and we'll bug you again real soon. We'll get you back on.
You betcha.
Thanks, buddy.
Take care. See you guys.
There he is, Chris Pronger.
It's interesting.
Yeah, interesting take on a lot of different things. I mean, Carlson, I think he was polarizing a couple of years ago. I think everyone has come aboard that he's just a remarkable player.
Yeah, and I think he's gone beyond that, Brian, where even just watching him live to help me, and Jamie's, although he works hard, he's kind of spoiled to get to sit there at ice level and watch that every night. I mean, I think when you talk about McDavid and Crosby, you got to put him right up there with them. He's that good. I watched it live, and I was just blown away.
It's gross, because on the broadcast, you try not to be a little bit biased. I mean, I know we're a Ottawa broadcast. We own the regional rights. But when you're watching
But there's
him,
the difference between being biased and being
just,
in awe.
And just being honest and saying, here it is again, another 26 minutes of domination.
And my God, one thing me and Pooley noticed is the passing. The passing on the tape, it doesn't matter if it's 5 feet, 50 feet, 20, it's just a missile on the tape.
That's what, I mean, Chris Pronger was known as one of the best first pass out of his zone, tape-to-tape rocket, no matter where it was. Carlson has that because he has the mobility and the vision to get it there.
He's as every good as passer as Prongs. It's just ridiculous.
He is great. And, you know, there was a, I look back in my era, it was Pronger and Lidstrom who always controlled the pace from the back end. And Niedermeyer, obviously, too.
Yeah.
Playing with Pronger, he would see things that other people wouldn't. And he would come off and complain to me, you know, why is Dimitra taking that route? I can get him a breakaway if he cuts here. And he would have these conversations with Pavel. You know, different lane, I can get you the puck. I know I can. That's what made these guys so special is they processed the game at such a higher level than anybody else. And that's what made them – it was funny because there were times where he would say to Jamal Mayers, like, didn't you see that play? And Jamal would say, no, I don't have your vision. It's just the truth. Mm-hmm. Like, it's some guys just don't have that vision. And I think it frustrated guys like Brett Hull. You know, Brett Hull had this amazing vision. He's got a great take on the game. And he would say to somebody else, you didn't see me there. And say, no, I didn't see you.
Well, I think that's the amazing thing about Carlson, though, is I've never seen him flustered. I've never seen him frustrated. I've never seen him snap.
The one, once in the playoffs there, Brassard. I don't remember they gave up the shorthanded goal where Craig Anderson bumbled the puck away.
You don't remember Carlson snapping on Brassard?
He was yelling at Brassard.
Oh, that's right, from the bench.
Yeah, from the
bench.
Where
people thought he was yelling at the ref, but he was yelling at Brassard.
Only one guy thought he was yelling at the ref.
Yeah, right. One guy thought he was yelling at the ref. The rest of the world thought he was yelling at Brassard. And then he set Brassard up for that ridiculous play.
Look at old Dreger in the Dreger Cafe in Paris.
Yeah, how did that get set up?
Talk about a floater?
All those guys are set up beautifully over there, aren't they?
They are.
Like, they all had the day off.
And, Cafe.
And next year, I think it's in Denmark, so they'll be hanging out in Copenhagen. And, can they go, to Uzbekistan once? Like, just go to some place where no one wants to go.
Go to Magnitogorsk.
What a floater. He's in Paris at the Dreger Cafe.
Well, he spoke with Babcock today, and...
Turn around some of that audio.
You know what?
I honestly don't know why we're not playing the whole interview on our radio show.
Why would we do that?
Maple Leaf content. Mike Babcock.
We'll play a couple of clips. We'll let you hear what he had to say about them making some signings this summer.
Yeah, I thought that was
And what he had to say about Matthews being captain material. There's
All
a couple
I know
of different
is we've
clips.
We've got 40 minutes till Jack Armstrong. Let's make use of it. And I think that would be a good little to do.
We're going to play a couple of clips of what Babcock had to say. We got to get into this Matt Harvey
story. You don't listen.
Do you think people want to sit there and listen to a TV interview?
It's the audio. They're driving. They'll get the audio version of it.
No, they won't. We'll play some clips. We'll comment on it.
We should comment.
We got to get to the Matt Harvey stuff as well.
Yeah, that Matt Harvey
The news
stuff
that's coming out about what this guy's routine was and why he got suspended by the team.
I would have made it longer than 3 days, to be honest with you.
Remember, Kadri's suspension was 3 games. Or 3 days, wasn't
three days,
it? I think
yeah.
he got three. That seems to be the going rate for guys that get caught doing stupid things.
Yeah.
So if you missed out on the details, we'll tell you about that. We'll let you hear what Babcock had to say about potential signings and whether or not Matthews is ready to be the captain of the Maple Leafs. Overdrive continues on the TSN Go app. All right, Jack Armstrong will join us in about half an hour, recapping what Masai Ujiri had to say earlier today. Got Bob McKenzie in studio as well. The Jays are back in action tonight. Big win last night over Edwin and the Tribe. And I'm just on Proline's website. They're paying plus 220. And I'm surprised that the odds aren't actually better than that. Because if you look at what kind of a lineup the Toronto Blue Jays are putting forth tonight.
It's not good.
Right?
It is... Shockingly thin.
They're going to win tonight.
I think they actually might, because it never makes sense, right?
It's that lineup. It's that grit grinder lineup and just go out and get the job done. Coaches are always like, wouldn't it be something if these guys went out there and got a win?
The old Lou Brown routine.
They're going to win tonight. I've got a feeling.
Pilar hitting first, a.k.a. Willie Mays Hayes.
Who's pitching again? Sorry.
Mike Bolsinger. who is making his Blue Jay debut, I believe. Mike Ullman is in the nine spot. He's playing the role of Jake Taylor behind the dish. You've got Carrera, a.k.a. I don't even know who that would be. Probably an extra playing left field. He's hitting second. Bautista third. Morales fourth. Smoke fifth. Goin sixth. Barney seventh. Coughlin eighth. Ullman ninth.
Don't you love when Jake Taylor calls for the bunt and Lou Brown is just...
That's a hell of an idea. What's the better finish of a movie, sports movie? The Rudy finish or Major League finish?
Major League, definitely.
I'd go Rudy. I love that Rudy film.
I didn't like that movie that much.
You didn't like Rudy?
I don't know. He's such a little critter.
Yeah, he's a loser.
I don't know.
You guys are losers.
No, but
you.
It's because he's you.
How is he me? I'm taller than both of you.
That's true.
You're the guy that kind of had some little engine in him that just couldn't get crap done.
In fact, it's a complete opposite. I didn't have an engine. That's probably why I'm sitting where I'm sitting right now. If I had the engine of Rudy, I'd be playing game six tonight at the Garden.
Yeah, it just, I don't know. It was just...
What's not to like about that Rudy
annoying.
Finish?
That's what he was
annoying.
Yeah,
he's a little pencil neck, just buzzing around. Get me in, coach.
You're Vince Vaughn from Rudy. You're the clown who goofs on him all the time.
And the coach
would grab you by the mask and say, if you had half the heart that Rudy had, you'd be an All-American.
If
Rudy had half the talent of us, he'd be in the big leagues like us. So he's a loser.
That's probably true, too.
It was just... The movie was great, but I felt...
You don't think it's great. Just admit, you don't think it's great.
It's annoying after a while.
From a team perspective, I felt that he was a distraction. I just felt like Rudy
was... It's not his fault. He's on the practice squad.
I know.
He works his tail off all the time. The previous coach promised him an appearance. The guy gets gassed, and then the new guy screws him
over. Okay, put it this way. If we end up... Something happened to this show, I'd go in and lay my jersey on the desk for both of you.
Would you?
Yeah.
Thank you, Noodles.
I'd
do
go
the
to
same
Jeff
for
McDonald's desk and put my jersey right on there and say, I'm not in without these two.
I essentially didn't do that during the 10K when at 4K I decided 4K, I'm out of here.
You gave the wave to
I'm picking my jersey up and I'm running away.
Grabbed your jersey, wiped your ass with it, and then tossed it back at me and said,
peace.
Peace out.
I love the end of the Rudy movie. It gets me every single time.
You're a tearjerker, right?
Absolutely. I'm not. I honestly can't say I've ever been emotional about anything when it comes to the arts. Music, movies, nothing.
Right.
Rudy gets me every single time. And Jon Favreau's up there crying, and his old man's in the stands, and Rudy comes in with a fist pump, and then he gets the sack. It's the best.
I know. He does get the sack.
It's the best, man.
I thought that was pretty cool. But the way that he runs into the game,
it's a hero move. It's some Hollywood.
I was hoping, not just because I'm sick in the head, but what if he goes to and somebody just buries him and that's how the movie ends?
He just gets crushed.
He just gets dusted.
And gets taken out on a stretcher. And that's the end of Rudy's career.
That would be awful.
Jeff tweeting and asking, do you think John Gibbons has a nude cutout of Mark Shapiro in the dugout tonight? Just like in Major League.
Every win we peel off a strip.
Of Shapiro.
That's hilarious.
Shapiro and company.
Shapiro on a shark. Every win we peel off a strip.
Well, I mean, it's not Shapiro's fault that Donaldson, Tulowitzki, Martin, Happ, Sanchez, they're all on the DL.
They've got a full team on the DL.
Yeah, it's a mess.
It's a grind.
Anyway, quickly on this Matt Harvey story. If you're not familiar with it, he was scheduled to pitch on Sunday. Shows up to the ballpark, gets told, you're not pitching, you're not playing, get the hell out of here, you're suspended for 3 days. Because on the previous day, on the Saturday, they were playing an afternoon game.
Right.
And he called it in, allegedly, claiming he had a migraine, so he wasn't going to make it to the park. Now, this happens more often than you probably know. Starting pitchers that aren't pitching that night and aren't playing, that just somehow don't show up to the park.
Right.
It wouldn't shock me at all if there were a couple of veteran guys who've been in the league for 15 years who almost have it written in their contract. I'm not showing up if
David
I'm not
Wells,
pitching.
Do you think David Wells would show up?
It wouldn't shock me at all.
I would think there would have been numerous times.
A couple guys who are like, I'm not pitching for another 3 days. Don't talk to me. I'm not showing up. We're in New York. I'm having a time. But Harvey has a history of being out of shape, of kind of acting silly. Everyone claims he wants to be Jeter. He wants to be the hero of New York, right, hooking up with all these girls. But the problem is he hasn't followed through necessarily. And what happened to him was someone spotted him out Friday night, early Saturday morning at a bar at like 4 in the morning.
Yeah.
Gross. And then allegedly, the story goes, the next day somehow he got up, went out and golfed, and then potentially got back into it a bit and then realized, I can't show up at the park because if I do, I'm in trouble.
Right.
The Mets put all the pieces together, suspended him for 3 days.
Yeah.
How does the team handle this when this guy rolls back into the clubhouse?
He probably has a quick little meeting and apologizes to the guys, and you move on.
I have to buy the boys lunch.
Yeah, something like that.
What are you going to do? What are you going to do? It's either such a problem or he's got to get help, and it's a major issue, or it's like, guys, I screwed up.
Yeah.
Let me buy you lunch. This won't happen again.
You go at it.
You've seen the Evander Kane scenario where he came in front of the cameras. He's like, this is never going to happen again. And then 2 months later, it happens again. He's in trouble. And then 2 months later, so.
That's the thing. It makes you wonder what else had been going on beforhand for them to finally say that's enough.
Well, it probably wasn't a one-off.
Well,
you better be careful
if you're going to be in the locker room. Hey, baseball player, athletes, they have fun. Some do, some don't, but there's a lot that do.
But you better back it up, though. He's got an ERA north of 5, and the Mets have been a train wreck this year.
Yeah.
Right? Because you hear it a lot of times, players are like, we want to win. The only thing that matters is a ring. Well, if you're in that room, do you really believe the only thing that matters is winning to Matt Harvey? Or is it partying and being a superstar and being a celebrity and being a part of Page Six and the Post and all that?
That's the Mets' problem to deal with that culture. You want to talk about culture? It's like.
I never had a problem with a guy who lived his life away from the game as long as he played the game hard. And this is a clear mistake by Matt Harvey. And he's got to atone for it. But I don't think it's something where, you run him out of town or anything like that. It's a dumb mistake, and hopefully he turns it around from that. That's the one.
Guess what quiets it all?
Playing well
and winning.
But it sounds like he wasn't playing well.
Shutout.
Yeah, no, exactly. He goes out there next time and puts on a performance and continues that for the rest of the year. People forget about this, but he's got an ERA of like 5.64 or whatever.
Yeah, it's not good.
Which isn't good enough. That's a horrible number. That's horrible performances, especially on a team that is already dealing with a lot of issues. Before we get to what Babcock had to say about Matthews and kind of left the door open to him not being anointed the captain for this upcoming season, we should point out the Dallas Stars have acquired the rights to Ben Bishop from the LA Kings in exchange for Montreal's fourth-round pick in 2017.
Now, they'll find Jim Neal will either buy one out this summer, and you'll still have to spend a lot of money on Ben Bishop. My biggest concern, and Dallas I don't think really cares, is they need an upgrade in goal. Ben Bishop has a history of injuries. That's the concern, but Ben Bishop is a massive upgrade there. You had to do something. I was shocked that he didn't do something last summer, but with Ken Hitchcock there, more structured team, and a goaltender who handles the puck well and is an upgrade on both of those goaltenders. Smart move for a fourth rounder. Now you're going to have to spend money, though.
And you know the signing's going to happen because, like, look at the Darling stuff.
Yeah.
Remember, this was the most ridiculous quote, and I'm not sure who his agent was, but came out pretty quickly that we had no idea that Carolina was even interested. And then all of a sudden, 2 days later, he signs.
It's a trade and sign.
Ben Bishop's agent knows that Dallas
deal's
is
going to
pay. The deal's done. Absolutely. Deal's done. This means it's over. You're not making this trade unless you absolutely know it's done. And collusion happens.
It happens
all the
back
time.
Channel, it's a back channel conversation. Carolina took a big chance. That was a big number and big term for Scott Darling, who's not a starter in the NHL. That terrifies me for that organization. But Cam Ward, I'd be shocked if I think Eddie Lack they may be moving past. That would be my guess.
Mm-hmm.
And Darling and Ward, and Darling can spell Ward. The both of them can go at it.
It's kind of like the James Reimer signing.
Yeah, it is.
A lot of money, a lot of term for a guy who may not be a number one, but is a higher-end backup.
Absolutely.
That can help you. If
he's a 1A. He's a 1A.
Right.
Kind of.
But Bishop, if he's healthy, has proven he's a really good goalie.
Yeah, and he's a one for sure.
I'm with you. You put Bishop, a healthy Bishop, if he can give you 60 games and Hitchcock behind the bench, Dallas should be
That's
greatly
a playoff
improved.
Team right there for me.
Greatly improved.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm with you. So, interesting. As for what's going on with the Maple Leafs, Babcock, I believe Lamoriello, they're both over at the Worlds. Reports came out last week that there's a Swedish free agent defenseman that has agreed to sign, and it's going to happen at some point after the Worlds. And Babcock said there's a couple of different guys that they're kicking tires on. So it sounds like they'll probably bring in a couple of guys, but no one over here is really going to know who they are. European players playing right. in the Swedish Elite League or the KHL, whatever. But Darren Dreger sat down with Babcock and was asking him about Austin Matthews and how he appears to be captain material. And Babcock agreed. He said, absolutely, he is, but went on to say this about the timing of it all and when is the best timing to actually anoint him as the captain.
You got to make the right decisions at the right time. And your second year for young players are often the toughest year. And so I think, just letting them grow is an important thing and try not to get in their own way.
That kind of opens the door to them suggesting it's not going to happen going into year two.
That's all you're going to play of him?
If that's all I'm going to play.
It's good.
He was on with us like a week and a half ago. What do you think has changed that Dreger's going to get out of Babcock that we didn't get
out? I just really like the Dreger Cafe. I think it's bringing out good material, and we should be promoting it.
It's not even Friday yet. What is it, Tuesday?
Yeah, why are you in such a mail-it-in mode?
I think I've been very good today. I've been very engaged.
I think you have been too, but why do you keep asking for all of this audio to be played?
I just don't understand. Like,
hey, who cares? What do you make of the comment?
That's for sure they're saying maybe the assistant next year, but it doesn't sound like
he's not captain. Start of the season, remember we had the Jerry's percentage or whatever future. He's not going to be the captain drop of the puck in October. I wholeheartedly believe that. And you know what changed my mind is when we had Bob McKenzie in and – I continue to think that the Leafs are still in protection mode with a lot of these young guys. And Babcock's comments alone on Dion Phaneuf led me to believe that they still want to protect Austin a little bit more. And I
how much more wrong protection
word.
Can you really give this guy? Like
he talked to the media four times this year.
But what did he do that would lead you to believe the captaincy would all of a sudden spiral his career out of control?
I'll give you an example.
Like, nothing can phase this kid.
I'm not saying his career would spiral out of control. What they're trying to do is just make sure that, first of all, you're looking at the personality, which if you want to tie parallels, that's Connor McDavid, because they both kind of have I think behind the scenes, they're really funny and good guys and all of that, but they have to put up a professional front.
There's no personality in their interviews.
Correct. Either one of them. This is a market, if you think Edmonton's big, this is a market 10 times that size. It's just it's a big responsibility, and I think they know he can handle it. But why rush that when you know the inevitable's coming?
I understand that, and ultimately it really doesn't matter that much. But what I would suggest is maybe a bit disingenuous about that stance that the second year is the toughest year. They don't think he's taken a step back.
Oh, no, I don't think
no one thinks he's taken a step back.
I don't think his play is going to be affected.
So what is more difficult the second year then? If it's not his play that's going to take a step back, what is more difficult?
For him, like they call it the sophomore jinx, where sometimes you might find things easy. I mean, Austin Matthews in the second half of the season or after 20 games shouldn't have been a surprise to anybody in the National Hockey League. But next year, it's going to be checking assignments more than it even was. He's going to get top-end D pairings, and he just might find things a little bit more difficult. And that's why sometimes there is that sophomore jinx, because you're not a surprise anymore. You were circled, and it's like, don't let that guy touch the puck.
Yeah, there will be different matchups.
That's
that
why it's difficult the second year, when you have success in the first.
I just think I'm more talking about the burden of the captaincy that comes with this organization. Like, and regardless of what you think of it or not, it is there. And
it is, but at some point,
the only thing I wonder is if the player can change the perspective of Babs or anybody else saying, if you want me to be the captain, I'd like to be. I want to be. I don't know if he would do that. I don't know if he has an option to do that. And I don't know if that would change the opinion of anybody in the organization.
It's an interesting question. If he went to them, like, because Babcock has told this story many, many times, that he went to Matthews and said, do you want to play on the wing? Do you want to play center? And he said, I want to be the center. If they asked him, do you think you're ready to be the captain? I would assume he'd say, give it to me. I want it.
Right.
But at some point, Noodles, you got to either sink or swim.
I agree.
Right? Because guess what? In a year, the market isn't changing. It's the exact same market for the rest of this guy's
100%.
Career.
All I'm saying is that I believe they have a plan in place, and they may wade him into it instead of throwing him into it. Next year, he's going to have to do walk-off interviews and be available. He wasn't available at all this year. So if it goes from 0 to 50 to 100 instead of 0 to 100. So whenever that comes, whether it's Christmas, whether it's the following season, we all know
it's going to be him.
It's the worst kept secret, but I don't understand the rush.
I hear you, and I can't counter with how waiting a year would be detrimental to it.
Right.
There is no downside to waiting. I'm not suggesting that there's a downside. I'm not sitting here saying I'm going to hammer the Leafs for not giving him the cap. I'm not at all. What I'm saying is I don't think anything would phase this kid. I'm not concerned about the second-year jinx or slump with him. I think he's on a different level, just like McDavid, just like Crosby, just like Ovechkin, Malkin, Taves, Kane. I think this guy is a different beast. And I think another thing, like Leaf fans are basking in what we're hearing out of the World Hockey Championships, where Dreger was on the lunch this morning or this afternoon and said Marner's been Canada's best player. That's how good he's been. And Nylander, by all accounts, has been very good for Sweden. They're best players on a beach in Arizona. Like, those two kids are 20 years old, and they're lighting up the worlds, and yet Matthews, who's better than both of them and brings a completely different level, isn't even over there. So if you're a Leaf fan, I mean, you got to be excited about where this whole thing is going. Jack Armstrong in about 20 minutes, Bob McKenzie in studio. Masai Ujiri with an interesting comment about the style of play, and we'll let you hear what he had to say about Kyle Lowry and the idea of bringing him back as well. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050. Don't forget, O-Dog Noodles and I are gearing up for the Scotiabank Road Hockey to Conquer Cancer Tournament, September 23rd at Woodbine. Visit tsn1050.ca to make a donation on behalf of Team Overdrive. For every $20 you donate, you'll be entered to win roster spots on the team for you and a friend. All proceeds go to the Princess Margaret Cancer Center. So we're looking forward to that. The 10K is now behind us.
It'll be great. I'm going to play in that. I will be 100% healthy by then.
Your back will be 100% at that point.
Ready to rock. Any good stories on these?
Yeah, there's a lot of them. Talking about.
Can we bring them up, though? I don't know if we can. That's the unfortunate part.
That's the problem. We were talking about this shark story with allegedly Jim McElwain, the head coach of the Florida Gators, who may or may not have been naked grinning on top of a shark on a boat. And the picture circulated. And we're just asking people, you know, tell us your stories about, like, guys' trips gone awry. A couple of our female listeners writing in saying, hey, we got our own stories, too. So believe me, we're not segregating here at all.
No, we're not.
Men, women, you send us in your text, tweets, and emails about crazy stories on the road with the boys or girls. And we'll try to relay as many as we can.
Exactly.
Jack Armstrong to kick off the next hour on what Masai Ujiri had to say today and Bobby Mack in studio. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050.